Do you remember 1997? How much of it do you remember? Do you remember the landslide election, headlined and won by Tony Blair?
Stand here before number 10 Downing Street. I know.
Do you remember the transfer of Hong Kong from the Empire back to China? Do you remember that insanely catchy summer song and its associated dance craze? You know, the one where you'd pretend to swing a rope over your head like a cowboy. The one that was played across beaches all over the world. You know the one I mean. That super infectious carnival sounding tune from the Simon Cowell camp. Wait a minute. It'll come back to me in a moment. Oh no, wait, it won't. You know why? Because it didn't happen. History decided to create an alternative timeline, and we're now living in it. But for the sake of this episode, let's learn more about what might have been. It's time to talk to Danielle Barnett and say to her, let's take a look in your mirror.
In Your Mirror with Neil Velio.
The idea of this show is that you'll hear how successful people of today and the future have been overcoming their demons to win big in life. We'll learn all about how they've looked in their mirror and then looked back at their past life through it. My hope is that you listen to these stories and then you feel inspired to find a way to also look back at your past life in your mirror.
In Your Mirror is a Podnose podcasting network show.
Ah, the 90s music scene. Such a hedonistic musical era. With all of its ecstasy-taking, garage-raving, and Ibiza sex disease-catching shenanigans. An era that's seemingly forgotten by current pop culture, aside from the odd retro house remix or the occasional Netflix TV reboot. Seemingly always in the shadow of its slightly older and more influential Big Brother, more commonly known to you and I as the 80s. It's also significant for being an era in which Danielle Barnett's life changed literally overnight. And it's an unbelievable story. So, we're going to discover Danielle's mirror moment. But before we do that, let's first hold up the mirror to Danielle. And find out, who is she now?
I've gone back to what I can do rather than what I can't do to help people. And that is just led straight into my therapy. And I've developed anxiety course that I'm giving away for free to people to help them. I'm there for people to speak to. I do like therapy chats every Friday on my YouTube channel, which is The Now Coach. I call myself The Now Coach. And I'm just doing everything I can do to flipping help because I can't stand people suffering. I can't stand it. But I do know that we are flipping resilient and we will get through this. There is a light. This is lessons that life teaches us. And at the other end, we will look back and it's something that we will have gone through and thrived through. We will thrive through this, you know, and we'll grow. And we'll go on to greater paths as well and do what we love, our heart work for this planet. My heart, my authentic me is a therapist, like who I am as a person. I've always been the same. I've worked with charities, with orphans in Bulgaria. We've gone over there with my son and, you know, helped the orphans to have a holiday for a couple of weeks, you know, and when there's no language, but, you know, you've got that connection of just trust and kindness. And all throughout my life, I mean, I think it stemmed from when I was bullied as a kid. I was bullied very badly growing up. And I just, I lived behind so much pain for so many years that when I did finally learn NLP, it healed me on levels that I never even could have imagined, you know. I didn't think I had as many issues as what I had, you know, but it was like a big release. It was an incredible thing. And I just wanted to share what I could and what I know with as many as I can to help them too.
So when did you get into NLP then? Was that something you did quite a while ago or was it fairly recent?
What, about 4 or 5 years ago now? So it's weird because obviously nothing like this has ever happened before. I just kind of go with my heart and my gut, like where I feel I need to go. And I wanted to learn about life more. I wanted to learn because I've got an 11-year-old son. So I wanted to learn how to help him, really help him if he needed help going in the future or, you know, to do with passing on or, you know, to do with loss or grief or school or bully, anything that he was struggling with. I could help him on a level before, but now I can really help him using NLP and pictures and the way that your mind works and what you're thinking, your thoughts and your actions and your language, you know, an everyday thing that we all do, but we don't notice we're doing it. So that's when I kind of found NLP. A friend of mine actually said, you should learn NLP. And I said, what is NLP? I'm like, what the hell's that? I'm like, as if I had time to fit anything in my life at that time. And she goes, no, you should learn it. She goes, I think you'll really like it. So I started looking into it and I fell in love with it. So I did my practitioner certificate and I did that. And we went down to Brighton and I did all the course. And then I loved it that much that the year later, I went back and I did my master's. So I became an NLP master practitioner. And I did my clinical hypnotherapy as well, which means I can stop people from smoking and stop people, you know, help people lose weight and all of these things that clinical hypnotherapists can do. And a life coach, just helping people find who they are really and getting on the right track. And that was, as I say, 4 or 5 years ago now, or 4 years ago as the master. It's coming to its own in this last year. And who would have known? Who would have thought that? I'm just grateful I learned it. I'm grateful I can help.
I mean, it's really interesting that you say that it's come into its own and, you know, the challenges of 2020 and we're still experiencing them to a point now, although obviously the roadmap, we got light at the end of the tunnel and all that. Yeah, we'll see. Obviously, you were meant to be in that position that you're at now. So what was really interesting to me was right at the beginning of this conversation, you mentioned the bullying, highly relatable, something I think many of us have been through. It was a probably a big part of why I chose the career that I chose, to almost like overcome that fear of, you're nodding because you're an NLP practitioner and you're saying, you're totally.
I'm relating.
You're cracking the egg.
It's the lack of self-worth. We have to prove to ourselves and to everybody else, we can do this. Look what I'm doing. You know, I'm up on the stage in front of 100,000 people. You told me I couldn't sing at school. I got a record deal with Simon Cowell. You told me I'd never get anywhere. All of those things. Yeah, it's a lack of self-worth. We had to prove to everybody that we could do it. But mostly we were proving all this to ourselves. And you know what, with NLP, you go back. Obviously, I learn every day, but I fix so many self-worth issues. And I used to walk down the street with my head low, thinking everybody was looking at me as a daily occurrence, not even realizing it. And now I walk down the street and I really don't care who's looking at me. I'm just happy to be me. And if people like me, then that's great. And if they don't, well, that's great too. You know, it's all right. It's okay. I've always been led to things just because I've trusted that. I've trusted what I wanted and what I believe and the path that I've been on. And yes, it's been challenging many times. But going back, I remember when I was at school and I was about 17 and I was bunking school as you do. I wasn't very good at school. And I used to go to nightclubs because I found a crowd that I could fit in with. They liked me as a person, but they were a kind of a clubbing crowd. And I remember going to a club one night, seeing this PA. Do you remember Strike? You sure do.
Oh, do I?
Right, classic. And she was doing a PA in this club that night. And I remember being in this club, looking at the stage, mesmerized, thinking, I want to be you. I just want to be you. And from that moment on, I kind of like just went with it.
Sometimes something can happen in our lives. It's the literal point of no return. Life splits into different paths. Whichever path you end up on can determine what you see when you look in your mirror. I like to call this your mirror moment. Let's learn more about Danielle's mirror moment.
I had a couple of record deals, little ones, and I did quite well with those. And then I finally got a deal with Simon Cowell with RCA Records. It was a big summer song. It was going number one. It was going on the National Lottery on the TV back in the days when there was only Channel 1, 2, 3 and 4, you know? So it was like a big deal getting this National Lottery show. My video was all over Ibiza. It was all over all the TV. It was this GMTV, you know, Good Morning TV back in the day. It was their song of the summer. So it was played every day. It was on all the radio stations. It was everywhere. And it was building up to this big release when the National Lottery was the week before, released on the next week, you know, so you'd have that big platform. I went out the week before. We went clubbing, as I did. And I was like, oh, I'm going to be so famous next week, because that was important back then, of course. But now it's a little bit different. You know, I'm a different person, but well, kind of. But so back then I was like, oh, my life's going to change. And I came in from, I think I went to the Hippodrome that night. And I came in about 2 o'clock in the morning, as you do. And as I turned on the telly, it was me and my friend. And I turned the telly on, just having a cup of tea. And
we have reports from Paris. The Diana, Princess of Wales, has been killed in a car accident, and that her partner, Dodi Fayed, has also been killed. They were apparently being pursued by paparazzi on two motorcycles.
All over the telly was Princess Diana was killed, tragically, in that car accident. And I just remember looking at that TV, just going, oh my gosh. I couldn't quite compute the effect it was going to have, not only on me, but also the world, you know, because it was so huge. And as the day progressed and, you know, the next day and the next day, I was devastated for her. Don't get me wrong. I think she was a beautiful, wonderful person, did a lot for charity and a complete role model. But I knew my life was going to change, but I didn't realize quite how much. I literally had a phone call from my manager on the Monday morning saying that Simon Cowell had phoned him. Simon Cowell didn't even call me, and he shelved the record because it was a summer song. And I went from a year promo, everything that I know, all my hopes, all my dreams, were just shattered in the space of one phone call. And I felt yet again that self-worth issues, you know, those worthlessness. But I am resilient because I've been through it. I've been through it a million times. So I used to get up and I brush myself off. And I thought to myself, I'm never going to feel like this again. And I never want anyone that I ever work with to feel like this, because it's just not a nice feeling. It's just not a nice feeling. And that's when I went into band management. And at that time, I also got offered the Urban Cookie Collective role, because my producer for Ritmo de la Noche, which was the RCA Records, he was the writer of The Key to Secret. It all came into its own. And Diane Charlemagne, the incredible talent and legend that she is, unfortunately, she passed a few years ago now, and she was an amazing woman. I knew her personally, and she was actually a backing singer on my RCA track. So it was really like very natural. It was, you know, I am a performer. I've always done it. I love it. I love giving my energy. I get so much back from it. I get that energy back again. And that's how I got asked to do Urban Cookie, because Diane had gone on tour, on a world tour with Moby. Rowan was like, I need a lead singer. And that was 25 years ago. And I haven't looked back. I've loved every second of it, every second.
This has been a gig. I love you guys.
Now, that wasn't your only brush with fame, was it? Being in the video that unfortunately wasn't to be. You ended up on a pretty huge national TV show. Tell us more about that, because I watched the clip and it looks like you've stayed true to music. You're clearly very passionate about music, which is amazing to see. Touring with Urban Cookie Collective at the moment. Obviously, that suggests that you are still into music and not bitter about the situation, which is fantastic. But you've stayed true to music in a more technical way. Tell us more about your appearance on Dragon's Den.
Oh, Dragon's Den. Do you know that's had like a million, near on a million views on YouTube now? That Dragon's Den. It's mental, isn't it? Isn't it mad? Like a million people have seen me go, oh.
Can you imagine a million people watching a business meeting for real? Do you know what I mean? Oh, I've come here to sell you paperclips. A million people watching that. I don't think so.
Oh, my God. And I'm the least business person like that anyway. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of just so random. But myself and my business partner at the time, my best friend he was as well, we worked together for 20 years, you know, a long, long time. As I say before, I went into band management and I had a lot of success with a band called Point Break. And we had a top 10 in England and top 20 album and number one over in Asia. We had a big advert with Brad Pitt in it that was starring in it that was playing for 6 months in Asia. So that actually enabled me to buy my house because I had the royalties from the advert. And then after Point Break left, through no fault of my own, one of the members decided that he didn't want to do it anymore. We transitioned into a band called Free Faller, who were basically the same kind of people that were in Point Break, but we just rejuggled it. It was a real live pop band. That's what it was. And we had a number five hit in the UK. In fact, we had two top 10 hits in the UK. And we did really, really well. We were doing a gig in Wales. I think it was Red Dragon FM, you know, in front of those thousands of people. It was one band after the other. And we used to like to play live. So we went on stage and we plugged all our bits in that we've done a million times. And the guitarist went to play the first chord. And as he started to roll up the volume on this thing to play the first chord, out of all the big speakers in front of like 20,000 people, blast the radio station, just blasts out like a radio wave. Dave, who was in the middle, who's my business partner, was in the middle on the sound desk, fiddling all the knobs frantically. I'm standing side of stage going, what on earth is going on? And it was like 30 seconds, but it was a long 30 seconds. Then you've got people in the audience just going, oh my God, hands to their ears, you know, that kind of thing. We were just like, what was it? And we figured out it was the guitarist. His cable was acting as an antenna and was picking up a radio station because it's copper and copper splinters, right? So these little splinters were picking up the radio signal coming out the amp. Anyway, we figured it out, changed the cable, plugged back in. And we decided, okay, well, so how do you get around that? We've always been a bit, you know, if there's a problem, let's solve it rather than just dealing with it. It's the same with the pandemic. If there's a problem, we'll solve it. It will happen, you know. And if you can't solve it, then do something about it. We can do something different. We can choose something different. So at that time, we looked into it and there was radio wireless systems. They were all available, but they had their own problems with sound and pickups and all that kind of thing. So we thought, okay, well, we'll buy an optical guitar cable. That's what we'll do because then it's just light. You can't pick up anything in between. You know, we didn't want it digitized because digitized affects the analog quality of the sound. We wanted that pure sound. So we decided to make an analog optical guitar cable. And we did. We made it. We got a patent granted, a European patent, a US patent granted, trademarks passed. And that was another 10 years of my life, a journey that was incredible. And Coldplay used our cable for their last album. They recorded the whole of their last album with it. It was incredible. And we had some massive people, bands, you know, phoning us up, wanting to try our cable. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so surreal. So surreal. So in the industry, it was getting amazing feedback, amazing, amazing people using it and wanting it. But in the general public, no one really knew about us. So we were getting music press, but we weren't getting the general press. So I thought to myself, okay, so how do we get it out to the public? I thought, okay, Dragon's Den. I got a phone call from Dragon's Den. They said, we want you to come in for an audition. We had our audition. They loved it. We had the second produce audition and they loved it too. And then we had to do all this due diligence, which was like a massive folder full of stuff. We did all that. And then we got onto the show and we were featured really quite well, you know, in this show. Yeah, that's it. That's the light lead story.
What did the dragons make of your invention then?
Well, Peter Jones didn't want it because you didn't have to ever change it because it was basically one of those things that weren't great. It was a perfect guitar cable. And once you bought one, the only thing that could go wrong technically would be the electrics, but it was very simple circuitry and it wasn't an upsell product. It was just, you know, what it was. Although you could do other things with the technology. But we did get investment from Tuka Silliman on the day.
Well, I'll tell you what. This is my offer.
Bless your heart, Tuka.
I will give you the 70,000 for 35% of the business.
Do you know what?
We will do that.
We'll do it.
We'll do that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Right?
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you very
well
much.
Done. Well done.
We got what we asked for. And it wasn't about the percentage with me. As I say before, it's not. It's never been about the money for me. It's about what can we do? What can we achieve? You know, it's like I'm very much that person. So we said yes. And once we came out of Dragon's Den, what we'd created is something incredible. But unfortunately, the market for a high-end cable product was very small for the price it would have to be for the manufacturer. And it had to be manufactured and there was additional costs into manufacture. And that got to the point where I was like, do you know what? I don't want to do it anymore. We don't want to do it anymore. We never took the money from Duke Cinnamon. We literally looked at, you know, black and white. It is, you know, this is the facts. Yes, we can do it. But I didn't really want to be in a world, that business world either. I didn't fit in and I didn't really like it.
The person who Danielle now sees looking back in the mirror is very different from the person she saw back when she was 17. Back then, she wanted to be a famous pop star, having been inspired by a singer in a nightclub. Now, she's got very different priorities.
I just want people to be happy. And I think the underlying theme throughout the whole of my life, including going back to school days, you know, because I was the joker, the practical joker, I just want people to feel better. That's all I want. And throughout my life, all my singing that I do, I don't do it because, you know, the fame and all that kind of stuff of it. It's not about that for me. It's about making people feel flipping happy, bringing back those childhood memories, reminiscing, you know, doing something that I love and knowing that they're loving it too. And if they're not loving it, that's okay. That's all right. You know, so it's just being authentically who I am. And I only kind of realized that when I started doing my NLP, because it is the theme of my life, enabling people to allow themselves to be happy, because that's all we can do.
As it transpires, Ritmo de la Noche was a doomed track. There have been a whole bunch of attempts at making this tune into a hit, with acts named Lorca and Mystic, just a couple, credited with a try. Oh. It turns out there was a scandal surrounding the Mystic one that hit the Sunday newspapers. The lead singer apparently wasn't the lead singer at all, but some girl that Simon Cowell had spotted in a nightclub, and he wanted to make her into a star. Talk about taking the Ritmo de la Noche literally, if you know what I mean, and I think you do. Anyway, the negative press killed the track. Danielle has now looked in the mirror and found her happiness, helping others to be happy through a combination of coaching and performing. What about you? Have you looked in your mirror yet? If you do, I hope you like what you see. Don't be afraid to look in your mirror. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do follow or subscribe on your favourite podcast app. Until the next episode.
Being 16 up against adults that had been racing for 7-8 years plus, and they were in their 30s, kind of at the peak of their sport. So jumping into that was, I was out of my depth at the start, but I gradually found my ground and started winning the races.
In Your Mirror is a Podnose podcasting network show.